Some 350 Michigan prison inmates woke up today with a new view on life. That's because of the opinion handed down Monday by the U.S. Supreme Court. In a 6-3 decision, the High Court ruled all prisoners who've been sentenced to life without parole for crimes committed as minors should get a chance to seek parole. Deborah LaBelle is director of the Juvenile Life Without Parole Initiative with the ACLU, and she's an attorney based in Ann Arbor. Welcome back to the program, Deborah.
Good to be back.
And Tanya Raphael is with us. Her son, Keith Maxey, was 17 when he was sentenced to life without parole after being convicted of aiding and abetting a murder. That incident happened when he was 16 years old, and he has served 8 years of his sentence so far. Tanya, good to have you with us.
I am so glad to be with you guys.
I can hear quite a smile in her voice, and I can see a smile on your face. Deborah, what were your thoughts and feelings, Deborah, when you got word of yesterday's High Court decision?
Even as much as you anticipate it, you know, I think it was both a concept of joy and envisioning of what people were feeling inside and a relief that we were finally at a place where the state of Michigan couldn't deny a second chance for people. And I think my staff was, there were a lot of tears of both happiness and really the relief and the anticipation of the moment when we could talk to family members like Tanya and people from the inside.
Tanya, tell us Keith's story.
Well, it was the day before Christmas, and I was watching the news, and I heard a 16-year-old was shot and dead on arrival to the hospital. And I got to the hospital because a few family members called around and let us know that he had been shot. And we got there in the first 48 hours, met us there. And they were telling us what happened and that it was a drug delivery gone bad and that my son had been shot several times and he was also on life support. And the doctor came out and told me he did what he could to save his life. And we went from there to him being on prison hold at the hospital after they found out he didn't have anything to do with the shooting. He was just there. They found out that the other persons had ran away. But Keith went through a rehabilitation time where he had to teach himself how to walk all over again. He had a colostomy bag. He used a wheelchair, a walker. And he did get up from there. He taught himself how to walk again, and he said, well, Mama, I think I should have died, he said, because I just can't live like this. I say, no, you don't know who you're going to help. And I just, all of that flashback in my mind that he wanted to die. He didn't want to live because he knew they had given him life. He cried in the courtroom, and he looked at me like a little baby, and he said, Mommy, he called my name, and I was like, I can't do anything for him. But I'll never forget the day when they gave him life. And they escorted us out. The police escorted us out. And I just fell down and I screamed to God. And I said, God, I know you didn't save my son's life for him to spend the rest of his life in prison. I said, I'll change places with him like that. And I just passed out and everybody had to pick me up and carry me to the car. And so we just went through a process of him, you know, not having any help to him getting help. And I thank God for Deborah LaBelle and them coming along and helping him with this case because it gave him hope again. It put a twinkle in his eye again. And when I heard the case yesterday, I just began to cry and jump up and down. And I said, it may not be today and it may not be tomorrow, but we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I just thank God. I began to say, thank you, Jesus. And I was crying. And some of the people from my church was crying on the phone with me. And it was like, we just been praying for Keith to be able to come home one day. So it just was such a blessing, and I know I'm getting emotional and crying and stuff, but I can't help it because I know that the Lord didn't bring him through this for him to spend the rest of his life in prison.
Deborah, I want to have you kind of give us a sense of the legal significance of this decision, this Monday's ruling, Montgomery versus Louisiana, because it builds on a very significant case from 2012, Miller versus Alabama. So can you help us understand both of these decisions and how they fit together?
And I think you even have to start a little earlier, if you don't mind, because what the Supreme Court has been saying is what we all know and what many people feel is that you cannot treat children who come in conflict with the law the same as their adults. You just can't. They're not. We don't treat them that way in the civil system, and you shouldn't treat them away in the criminal system. So first they struck down the death penalty for children under the age of 18. And then they said, you know, you can't have a mandatory life without possibility of parole for children. You can't just say they're the same as an adult and we're going to put them in at 14, 15, 16, 17.
And that was the Miller case.
That's the Miller case mm-hmm. in 2012 and throw away the key. You must look at them as children and their attendant consequences. And part of the reasoning of the court was both understanding who children are, but looking at also at the brain science that has come down that says, we know, I mean, the court actually says, as any parent knows, and those of us who are willing to remember know, mm-hmm. your childlike actions are not very mature. And what they said is the science now says that our frontal lobes are not developed until in the early 20s and probably later for boys. And so what they said is to sentence him to that life forever is akin to the death penalty, and you can't do it. It's unconstitutional. It's cruel and unusual punishment, the court said. What Michigan then did is said, okay, in the future we'll obey that, but for all the 360 kids who are serving that unconstitutional sentence, they have to keep serving it till they die.
We will not go retroactive.
We will not go retroactive. And that went up to the Michigan Supreme Court. Our attorney general, you know, mm-hmm. robustly argued that there should be no retroactivity. They should all stay in there until they die, no matter if they'd committed a homicide or not, if they were convicted of aiding and abetting like Keith. They all stay there till they die, whether they're rehabilitated or not. We're
and
not
I know
going to look at them.
He argued that that would be traumatic to the victims' families.
It would, but, you know, of course, we have many, many victims' families saying, not in our name, please. Mm. This is not what we wanted. So, you know, the Michigan Supreme Court went along with that in a 4-3 decision. The three justices were prescient, and the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday said no. Of course not.
So what now, Deborah? I mean, when you think about here comes this decision, did the opinion give any guidelines as far as when resentencing hearings should happen and where and who will have jurisdiction?
So it's interesting now because we had a case then in which a federal judge said 2 years ago that all youth who are serving this sentence, it is unconstitutional in the future, and they should all be treated as parolable. And you have to have a parole system that will give them meaningful opportunity for release, and ordered the state to present a plan to do that, saying, okay, how are you going to do this? We know how to do paroles, but these are kids. You have mm-hmm. to take certain things into consideration. A 30-year-old is very different than a 15-year-old, as we know, and they would be looking at them as 30-year-olds. And if they have aged out of their criminality and grown up and rehabilitated, let them go. The state appealed that. It's in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which decided to wait until Montgomery was decided before they released their opinion. So we expect that shortly. Back at the ranch. The legislature in Michigan passed some legislation that said, okay, if the Supreme Court rules, then you're going to trigger this legislation that requires youth to serve a minimum to 25 to 40 years, a minimum, and a maximum of 60. And there's no consideration of their youthful status unless the prosecutors seek life without parole. And I can tell you what has happened under that. Despite the Supreme Court saying again and very strongly in this, mm-hmm. it's a rare, uncommon, unusual youth that you can say irreparably corrupt, no possibility of redemption. The courts in Michigan, since Miller, have sentenced 11 youth to life without parole again, 10 of them kids of color. Mm-hmm. That's the majority of the kids they've looked at. So Michigan has not heard the Supreme Court, has not listened, and we hope that this decision again will say, listen, these are kids, these are children, and you have to treat them as such, and you have to give them hope. And you have to look at them and provide an opportunity for them to better themselves and come home.
Will this decision then get things moving?
Yes.
You don't, okay.
I mean, it will.
You can't argue with the language in this decision.
There, as one of the girls called me and said, can they appeal this? Is it really true? Is this our path? Please tell me they can't appeal this. And they can't. There is a path, there's an opportunity, and they have to be given it.
Tanya, in our final few seconds, are you now letting yourself think that one day Keith will actually walk out of that prison?
Yes, I am.
Well, it's certainly a significant day, and I can hear this in your voice, and we will have to keep, you know, keep in touch, and you'll have to let us know how things proceed for Keith and certainly, Deborah, with the other cases that you've been watching. Tanya Raphael is the mother of juvenile lifer Keith Maxey, while Deborah LaBelle is the director of the Juvenile Life Without Parole Initiative with the ACLU. Thank you so much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you so much for paying attention to this issue.
Thank you.